Tuesday, December 17th forecast from the National Weather Service. December 15th, sorry. Cloudy and breezy, 30% chance of afternoon snow showers. Today's high 39. Right now, wind southwest at 10, gusting to 23 miles per hour. 35 degrees Kenosha, 34 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. So glad to be with you and so glad to be with Nan Calvert, one of the best friends of the Morning Show, who is who joins us, of course, on a monthly basis to offer up various topics related to the natural world, to the environment around us. And we have something very special planned today, an exploration of a topic that I know next to nothing about, and actually Nan knew next to nothing about until very, very recently, something called solar farming, a very innovative way of farming, which involves a radically reduced level of fertilizer. And in its place, it offers up an innovative way of using sunlight. And so we're going to be finding out about this from somebody who has championed an exciting new project of involving solar farming right here in Kenosha County. We have with us John Holloway, who is the chair of the town of Paris. And he has been part of this new undertaking involving solar farming, which we will explore. And he's with us in our studios. We appreciate so much you making the trip to be with us today.
Thank you, Greg. Nice to be here.
And Nan, of course, thank you so much for all the programs you've put together all these years, and especially for 2022. And welcome back today to the Morning Show.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
So, Nan, tell us a little bit about how you first even encountered this thing called solar farming. It sounds like it was a bit of an accident, happy accident.
It was a happy accident, yes. You know, earlier this year, in driving around in the area, I saw all this infrastructure going in, a kind of infrastructure that I wasn't familiar with. You know, it wasn't your typical, subdivision. It wasn't your typical, I don't know. Anyway, and I was wondering what it was in this town of Paris, this smallish, charming, quaint town in Kenosha County. And so I did a little bit of Googling about Paris and found out that an enormous solar energy project was going in. And I didn't think there was enough information on it out there. And so I thought it would be really exciting for people and important for people to know about this project, because it's going to affect tens of thousands of households in a very, very positive and forward-moving way. And so fortunately, Chairman Holloway was more than gracious in accepting my invitation to come on to the radio. And that's what we're going to talk about today, the solar power project in Paris.
Excellent. So, John Holloway, before we get into that, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about Paris, and I don't mean Paris, France, of course, but Paris, Wisconsin, for the sake of our listeners who maybe don't even know exactly where Paris is located. Sure. And beyond just its location, just tell us whatever you think would be helpful for our listeners to know about Paris, for which you serve as town chairman.
The town of Paris was originally a 36-square-mile town immediately west of I-94. The main thoroughfare through Paris is Highway 142, Burlington Road, which runs from Kenosha out to Burlington. And it's primary feature is that it's an agricultural community. There is somewhat unique in that there is no town hamlet. It really has just been an agricultural base for most of its history. And you're right, we're not named after Paris, France. We're actually named after Paris, New York, which was named after Colonel Paris, who helped them through a really a rough winter. So that's actually where our Paris name comes from. We have about 1,500 people that live in our town. We were 36 square miles. We're a little bit smaller than that now because we have boundary agreements with the city of Kenosha and the village of Summers for orderly transition for development along the I-94 corridor. We have one of the unique things about our town was that our primary resource was agricultural land, and we have worked through zoning and planning to preserve that. And then ironically, utilities have seen that open space and said, this would be really easy to work with for our projects. And so that was what first attracted a company known as Inva Energy out of Chicago to explore developing a solar farm in our community.
Very good. So just to backtrack for a second, you said something about how there is no hamlet in Paris. Just explain exactly what you mean. I think I understand.
Sure. Most communities in Kenosha County had a railroad passing through them in the 1800s, and somewhere a small cluster of homes and retail built up around along those railroads. Paris is unique in that no railroads ever passed through the town of Paris, and there was never ever a town center. Mm. And so really the closest that we have to that is right at the corner of Highway 142 and Highway 45, is that there's a cluster of several small businesses at that intersection, but there is no area that you would identify as a town center.
Gotcha. So there's that corner where you can... Like it's like a little general store, and you can get gas and so on. And
you can't get gas there anymore.
Oh, it's okay.
Just, you can get a hamburger, and you can get a beverage of your choice.
Okay, but, well that's good too. And across the way, I think is like it used to be like a farm stand or a farmer's market or something.
There was somebody that did at one time, sell some vegetables there, but
I only remember because I used to go that way quite often on 142 heading towards Beloit, actually. And so that's always just a lovely little stretch, and I remember that intersection well, the way it was years and years ago. So tell us about the inquiry that evidently you and maybe others involved with the Paris government received from this energy company based in Chicago. Tell us more about them and the nature of their initial contact with you.
Inva Energy is a private company headquartered down in Chicago.
And what are they called again?
It's Inva Energy, so it's I-N-E-V-E-E-R-G-N-Y. I've spelled that incorrectly, but it's a play on Innovative Energy, I believe.
Great.
They were originally conceived as a wind power generation, generating electricity from wind power, and then they transitioned into developing solar farms. They're one of the largest solar developers in the United States. They approached us, myself, and at that time our town chairman was Virgil Gintz. They had approached us and just let us know that they had identified this as an area where they felt there was going to be strong electrical demand in the future. Without going too far off into the weeds, one of the things that's attractive here was, it initially attracted them, was the idea that Foxconn was going to be developed, and which was going to be a major consumer of electricity. Mm. When solar or when any energy is developed, whether it be wind, solar, any of those type, they need to put it on the grid. And the farther the electricity has to follow to a user, they have to pay transmission costs on the grid commensurate to where that energy is going to be used. So it was attractive to them for Kenosha County was that it was going to be close to where they thought the power was going to be consumed. And so that was why they initially came to us. What attracted them was the fact that the town had preserved all this open space. Paris, if you look at Paris from a geological standpoint, much of Paris was originally created, it was the bowl of an ancient lake. Hmm. And so it's very flat because the soils were laid down by siltation. The slopes are very gentle. They're relatively flat. Not a lot of, because this ground has poor internal drainage, there isn't a lot of the trees and whatnot are fairly sparse only were on the high points and whatnot. So it was very attractive to them from a physical standpoint as well.
Interesting. You said that they've transitioned into solar from wind.
Yes.
So is it that they have discarded wind energy, or is that still part of what they do, and have they expanded into solar?
I believe they still probably do some wind energy, but as you're probably aware, is that with wind energy, I've never researched wind energy very deeply, but there is always some concerns with locations because they worry about flickering. They worry about the turbines being in bird migratory lanes and whatnot. And they've told me that they were finding it difficult to get siting locations for wind energy, and so they thought solar would be more easy to cite than wind was. So that was, at least that's what they've shared with me, is one of the reasons that the company transitioned.
Interesting. So what was it exactly that they wanted from the town of Paris? What was the nature of their inquiry to you?
Their inquiry to us was, their first contact with us was out of politeness, just making us aware that they were going to be in our community approaching landowners and asking them if they were interested in entering into long-term leases to lease their land for this project. So the first contact we had with them was strictly advisory. And then while they were out talking to landowners, we did our research and came up with what our thoughts and concerns were here. But it is strictly it is driven by the company. The town did not take a role for or against it. That we are working with dealing with the impacts, dealing from a permitting standpoint. Because they are generating more than 100 megawatts a year, that's the point in state of Wisconsin law, that if you generate more than 100 megawatts of power from a a development, then you don't have to apply for any local permits. You go straight to the state, and the state handles all permitting. So you go to the Public Service Commission, PSC, and then they are required to work with the local community, with the county, with the town, but the land doesn't have to be rezoned. The town cannot, town and the county cannot limit them. If Public Service Commission approves the project, approves the plans, the town cannot block it. And that was done intentionally by the legislature. They felt in their analysis of it that was more likely to get some of these cited.
Interesting. So what was it then exactly that this company wanted / needed from these various landowners?
They had so this is all free will. People oftentimes, because we're talking about energy, they're wondering whether it's eminent domain and whatnot. They're a private company. They had no eminent domain power. This was strictly driven by free market, and they had to approach by themselves all the various landowners and find out whether they were willing to enter into an exploratory contract and then a long-term contract to lease all or portions of their land for this project. The contracts, again, these contracts are between them and the landowner. The town is not part of these
right.
contracts, but what they have shared with us is that the initial contract is for 25 years, with the right for them to, at their discretion, to extend the lease for another 25 years. So it's designed for a maximum of 50 years, and so all they did was that they brought in land agents who went door to door knocking on doors. When they initially offered a base lease payment that they were proposing, and they did not find very, very people interested in it at the level that they initially proposed. And so then they came back and they raised their offer a number of times, and they eventually got, they needed a critical a mass of land for the size of because they knew how many acres they needed to generate X number of megawatts of power. So they ended up having under lease approximately 2,500 acres of land in the town of Paris that they had lease rights to. They ultimately will end up with, out of that land, about 1,400 acres of actual under array.
And so that means that number of acres in which something will be constructed
exactly
to capture this and generate this solar energy.
Sure.
So then are we talking about land that, in a sense, is used only for that? I mean, when a portion of a farmer's land, for instance, is devoted to this, that is land that no longer can be used for something else. Is that right?
It is exactly right. Early solar farms did leave larger spaces between the rows of arrays, and I'm showing you with my hands, which isn't helping here at all. But the early farms had much more space between the rows of arrays, and they actually landowners continued to make hay in between the rows of arrays. In some of them, they were grazing sheep and goats in there and whatnot. When you're talking about the level of lease payments that these current solar farms are paying, they can't afford to waste any space. So the density is much more higher. They're trying to capture as much energy per acre as they can. And so these arrays are fairly tight together. There will not be room there's room for maintenance vehicles, but there won't be room to make hay or any of that. So you're exactly right, is that that land will be out of production. The actual area that's under array will be secure. There'll be security fence around all of that. If they leased, um, they they agreed to do some setbacks. So if they have a farm leased adjacent to a non-participating landowner, they agreed not to bring their arrays right out to the property line. So there's a like a perimeter strip around between properties, so that but those areas will be primarily be planted with. They have a vegetative mix that's been approved by the state that includes deep-rooted plants, and it's also a portion of it that they agreed with. Jim Cruiser was county executive at that time, and Jim sat in on our negotiations, and the county had as one of their requirements that a portion of it be planted to vegetation that will support pollinators. So there will be a portion of it that you will see that will be supporting, you know, so they with the idea of butterflies and bees and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
So Nan is grinning from ear to ear. Those of you listening that can't see that, but I suppose, Nan, that's really significant when something like this gets put together, that something that to some people might seem like a negligible little detail, in fact, is not negligible at all. It might really make a huge difference.
Actually, it's enormous. When you think about supporting our native pollinators, all of our myriad native bees, I'm not talking about honeybees, but our native bees and other pollinators. And then, you know, I think everyone has heard me say at least a trillion times that the roots of native plants go so deep into the ground. And because of that, you have infiltration. You have water infiltration, runoff infiltration back into the underground aquifers. So, you know, you've replaced shallowly rooted non-native plants with native plants that are not only beautiful but highly functional and absolutely essential. Now you have a way to generate power. And the other thing that strikes me is that, you know, when you drive around places like Paris or the town of Dover or other places that still do, you know, fairly robust agricultural business, you see a farm go up for sale every time you turn around. But this is a way for farmers to hold on to their land. At least that's what I'm understanding. They're leasing it, or it's being leased by someone else, and they don't necessarily have to sell it off. And perhaps in 25 or 50 years, if they don't want to do this anymore, perhaps it will return to agriculture. I don't know. But at least, you know, 1,400 acres aren't going to be paved over, aren't right. going to be sodded over, and it will be highly productive land.
Hmm. And Paris is a little bit unique in that our whole land plan was designed to preserve open space in agriculture. And so in many communities, you're exactly right, Nan, is that in many communities, having a solar farm come in will stop, I'm going to say, sprawl, because it makes the land unavailable. But in Paris, we already had mechanisms that wasn't going to happen in Paris. So we're a little bit unique in that. One of our, as we looked at it as a town government, is that we worry that there has to be a sufficient base of available land for farmers to achieve a certain scale, and by most of this land that went into the leases was currently being leased to other farmers in the community, and so that actually took a chunk out of their available land. So it affected existing farmers because it reduced the available amount of land. But the one thing that you said is very true, is that when farm families were, or landowners, not all of them were farm families, but landowners were evaluating these, that's part of what they were looking at is I can do a one-time sale now, or that this is possibly a stream of income that maybe will not only give me some a higher cash flow, because the lease payments are substantially more than agricultural lease payments. Mm-hmm. And then some people have said this is a way that their family may be able to transition to the next generation that if they have four children, rather than selling the farm and distributing the money or them deciding they can't afford to own that land, is that now they're distributing a share of a stream of income. Mm-hmm. So it has the potential to do positive, and I think that's the way most families looked at it.
You know, it strikes me also that Paris is a role model now for agricultural communities, similar or at least not too dissimilar agricultural communities, because you took the steps to preserve your farmland, preserve your open space, which a lot of communities don't look to. They look at selling it off to developers, whether it's residential development or commercial development. But then you've also, you've in a sense taken the lead to position your community for the future in terms of energy production. And it's not just going to produce energy for Paris, as I understand, mm-hmm. but surrounding communities as well. Yep. And I think, this is a real eye-opener for small towns in rural towns in Wisconsin and other places to really begin thinking about the future, not only the immediate future, but, 50, 100, 250 years down the road. How will we maintain this but still move into the future? This is a very exciting thing that Paris is doing.
And part of it is going to be a learning experience. But there are other solar operations down south. They use them. North Carolina, I believe, has more solar energy production than any other state. What was different, I believe, down in the Carolinas is that they tended to use more rough ground. And when Invenergy first came to Paris, they said they were going to look for non-productive ag land, but then they realized it's easier to develop current flat ground than it was, rougher ground. But that there's a lot of things that we need to learn. This is having an impact on our farm drainage. It has effect on it. It obviously is going to have a visual impact. It looks jarringly different than what we're used to. Ultimately, this is a business, that there's a real feel-good part about it, but it is ultimately a business, and the developer had to make business mm-hmm. decisions and did some things that we as a community probably would prefer not to have happened, is that they need to maximize the solar gain on it, and with the landowner's permission, again, this is a private transaction between the landowner and the company, is that they removed a tremendous amount of trees. Mm-hmm. And so we're saying, oh, this is all wonderful, this is all green, mm-hmm. isn't this wonderful? At the same time, they're cutting down 300-year-old oak trees. And that's a permanent, when they leave, they're supposed to, our agreement with them is that they're supposed to return the land as much as possible to its original look and slope and whatnot, but you are not going to put a 300-year-old oak tree back on some of those farms. And
that's true.
That's to me as a as an aficionado of old oak trees, that's a hard one.
Hmm. It's tough. That is tough. Though those oaks, I don't know how many were removed, but. You're going to have native plant buffer zones. You talked about plants that attract pollinators. You talked about deep-rooted plants, those kinds of things. So there is a bit of an offset there. And there are things, you can't replace a 300-old oak tree, but you can plant more oaks within the community. So there are things that can be done to mitigate that loss. It's always horrible to lose those kinds of trees. But when you have an offset, you can mitigate those kinds of losses. And it's true, again, I've said it 1,000 times, our native oak species attract, what is it now? It's close to 550 different native species of moths and butterflies. So if you're out there, especially people listening in the town of Paris, plant some oak trees on your property so that we can maintain those species.
There you go. Before we went on the air, Mr. Holloway, I heard you telling Nan about a previous project involving solar that occurred in Cottage Grove, And apparently that was an undertaking that did not go particularly well. It might be an interesting point of contrast to hear a little bit about how that went down, as they say, and how this project was perhaps maybe conceived or implemented in a different way that sure. led to a more positive result.
It may be just the personalities of the community, but the project in Paris. So the Inva Energy first started developing one out in Iowa County. That's a little bit smaller than what this one will be, and then they went from there to propose a couple others. So ours was through the permitting process when Cottage Grove was proposed. Cottage Grove is a little bit different community. Obviously, they have up in that area. They by Cambridge and whatnot is that you have a community center, you have a growing village. This was going to surround the village of Cambridge, which would limit what it saw as its ability to grow, so that. For Paris's position was that we looked at it, we talked with the state regulators, that Governor Evers had told the state that he was starting this initiative to become carbon neutral by 2050, and that you had to start doing things if you're going to do that, and so that we knew the state government was going to be supportive of these type of projects, and that we looked at it and said that, yeah, it isn't perfect. We might like it a little bit different, but we don't think that we would be successful in fighting it. And so let's work with the company and try to make it as positive of a experience for everybody. That was just our choice as a community. My understanding in Cottage Grove is that there were a number of landowners adjacent to proposed leases that this wasn't their vision for their community, for what they wanted it to look like. And so they actively started a group to try to thwart the project. And I know that it at times became contentious. Ultimately, the Public Service Commission did permit that project, so it went through. I think it was very important for those people who were not in favor of it to have raised their voices. It helps community leaders to know where your constituents' feelings are.
Sure.
And it also helps the company that you're working with, Inva Energy, know that they have to have a strong public relations program. They know that they have to try to work with the community to make it so it benefits the community. And Inva Energy has, at least on our project, I don't know about the Cambridge project, but on our project, they sold the development to the utility companies, but they retained the rights to do the day-to-day management of it. So they're going to be in our community for another 50 years, and they know that they need to work as positively with us as possible because they're going to be amongst us here for the next 50 years.
Right. You also mentioned, as you were kind of introducing the whole topic, you mentioned Foxconn and the fact that the prospect of the Foxconn development and what was presumed to be huge energy demands was what attracted this company's attention to the town of Paris in the first place. As of course all of us know, Foxconn is ultimately not, at least thus far, panned out to be anything close to what was projected in terms of the scope of their operation and I would presume their energy needs. At any point were you worried that or did you suspect that perhaps this interest in Paris might be in a sense endangered by the kind of the drastic shift in what Foxconn has turned out to be, or did that end up being rather irrelevant to all of this?
I believe it was somewhat irrelevant. It probably would have helped the bottom line for the energy company because they would have had this big consumer, right next door. But ultimately, because the state of Wisconsin has taken the position that they're going to transition to a carbon neutral energy production, that energy had to be produced somehow. I knew that regardless of whether Foxconn ever came to fruition or not, that this project would be an economically sound development. The one thing that where economics have ironically thrown it off a little bit is that in their proposal to the PSC, they propose to include in this project a large battery storage facility so that they would be able to store excess energy during the day and release it at night. And they fully engineered those plans, but because of the fact that we now have so much competition for lithium from the lithium-ion batteries that we're trying to transition to electric cars, which have to have lithium-ion batteries. We have so many of our own personal electronic devices that are obviously lithium-based. And then the fact that lithium is incredibly dirty to refine and whatnot. Mm. We do very limited refinement of lithium in the United States. There's a shortage of lithium, or at least a price point shortage of it, is that I've been told that currently the battery storage portion of this project is on hold because the cost of lithium has gone up so high that they can't afford the batteries to do that. So the project is going to go forward. It's just that they won't have that storage capacity.
Right. I'm struck by how much you've had to learn about solar energy, because I mean it sounds like something that this is something that was not particularly on your personal radar before all of this happened. Just how much expertise have you managed to develop when it comes to understanding kind of the nature of solar energy and the way it's gathered, the way it's generated, the way it's transmitted?
In order to, as said, is that when Invenergy was kind enough to approach the town and let us know what they were thinking about, and then that gave us time as a community to do some research. So I attended a couple of energy seminars that the University of Wisconsin put on, and then I've obviously done a lot of research. We've met time and again with Invenergy people so that both they understood what our concerns were, we understood what their needs were, and as I said, we were trying to find common ground. So and then just by my nature, I enjoy learning, and so part of it was that I just was out researching just because we needed to understand what are the potential impacts. That if we knew this is coming, how might it impact us? How might we soften that? How we actually tried to look for areas where the town could actually become kind of a participant. We have absolutely no ownership in this, no stake in it at all. But I was wondering whether or not could it be where we could make a solar kind of a signature for the town of Paris, and so that individual homeowners could participate in this and whatnot. And it turns out that the product that Invenergy is installing is commercial grade, and you couldn't take one of their solar panels and put it on a house, because our home networks can't support the kind of wattage that's producing and whatnot. So we couldn't do that blending, and then quite frankly the energy companies have somewhat of a vested interest here in that they don't want necessarily everybody else producing power. They want to produce it and sell it to you. So there weren't the opportunities there that we were really, really hoping for. So our main goal here was to make sure that it didn't affect our residents, our landowners in negative ways. And the construction phase has had a huge impact on the community. We're hoping that we're absorbing that, and then once construction is done, that it will be a relatively benign neighbor.
Hmm. I did want to ask you where all of this is in terms of kind of the basic timeline. And maybe you could kind of remind us about exactly when did this initial inquiry come, and from whatever point in time that was, where are we now and where are we headed?
We're about 5 years into the process from when they initially approached us. And then it took them about a year and a half or so to find all of the leases, people willing to lease land to them. Negotiate with everybody. Then they had to put together a full-scale application to the PSC, and the PSC can take up to about 18 months to go through that process because there's a lot of research, double-checking, DNR gets involved. There's a lot of analysis that goes into it. And then they had to start construction. They had hoped to be online with the project by about this time is what their initial goal was. A combination of the impacts of COVID, the impacts of supply chain issues, whatnot, slowed things down. They ran into some things that weren't quite as easy out in the field as they thought they were going to be. Their goal right now is to be bringing probably two-thirds of the project at least online in 2023. They have basically all the infrastructure in now. The panels should start arriving in February or so of 2023, and then I don't know whether they have to bring the whole thing online in one big crash or whether they can, because it's broken down into about 20-acre segments is the way that they put it together. So I don't know whether they can bring it on piecemeal. Mm-hmm. But that's where they're at right now. Is their goal is 2023,
and then will they need to construct something that sort of roughly resembles a power plant, where all of this energy is stored and then distributed to other places?
That's a really good question, Greg. And that's the hard part about it, is that this energy cannot be stored. It has to be without the battery storage. It has to go on the grid immediately. Mm. So all of it will be collected, fed by underground cable to the town of Paris. Was home to, We Energies had a small gas turbine power plant in the town of Paris already. And then ATC, which is American Transmission Company, a Highline Power Company, transmission company, had a substation in the town of Paris. So they bought the land immediately south of that facility, and they're bringing all their power into a substation that they're building, and then it will be onto ATC's side and go onto the grid.
Interesting. And then from there, who, and maybe it's hard to determine this, but who exactly is going to be using this energy, and what determines who ends up using the energy that is generated in Paris?
That part I just know enough to be dangerous on, Greg. is that there's an entity called MISO, M-I-S-O, and I couldn't tell you what the acronym stands for, but that is ultimately a organization that determines power needs within the country and determines the flow of who has excess energy at the moment, who has a need, and they tell whether a power plant needs to come up to full capacity or drop down and whatnot. Is that so? That MISO, this is the organization that somewhat oversees this, is in that, and then how is determined that. So it isn't because We Energies ends up buying the whole project, the rights to the project. They is that ultimately, I believe it'll just go into their mix of power, and that we probably, you and I, wouldn't know whether it was power coming from solar or whether it's still from a gas-fired turbine or whatnot, but that We Energies will know all of this, and that they'll be able to show.
You already mentioned one impact that makes you a little sad is the removal of quite a number of big old oak trees and so on. do you have any concern about the impact that this has in terms of the farming that has occurred in Paris and a reduction of that?
It's part of it, but they are not the only part of it. What it's affecting is it's reducing the overall base of agricultural land available, and farm suppliers, one of the biggest impact is farm suppliers are getting reluctant to invest in our area because they know the number of farmers is reducing. And so where I go for agricultural inputs is moving farther and farther away from me. Mm. So that's an impact. It is having an impact by this. The amount of land available for rent going down is that we do know that there were several young farmers have lost land that they were using to start their agricultural career, because they were leasing land and now it's gone. It has caused a number of people to look. They are now traveling farther. You know, that they are. In order to justify the size of machinery that they have to have, or that they have, they needed to run over a certain number of acres. Mm-hmm. You know, if they lost land here in Paris, they went further west and competed for leased land further west. So it does have a little bit of a tumbling thing. I don't want to say that this project is the cause of it, it was happening already because of commercial expansion, you know, land being developed, but it's in our little world it sped it up.
Sure, it exacerbated the situation just a little bit, but otherwise it sounds like from your estimation and the estimation of some of your colleagues, the negatives in terms of impact are vastly outweighed by all kinds of positives. Is that fair to say?
I guess at this point, part of me says that some of it is going to be more subjective. Is that the loss of my unimpeded rural landscape to me might be a huge cost. Mm. Somebody else might drive by that and go, "Isn't that neat?" It makes me feel good. You know, so that's kind of a subjective thing. I'm a great big fan of turning a light switch and having lights come on, and so I'm not going to sit here and say, this shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't. This is a waste of farmland. I'm not going to be hypocritical and do that. But one of my concerns primarily has been that they ultimately took some of the best land in the town of Paris for this project, and the other part is that. I feel that Wisconsin should also be requiring, when there is commercial development, that the commercial development should also have to consider being available for solar. Mm. Now, we have a development going on along I-94 that ultimately they're going to have 23 acres under roof. There wasn't going to be one solar panel in that project.
Mm.
I feel, and I've talked to legislators about it, is that I feel, and it's just me personally, I'm not talking for the town, I'm just talking for John Holloway, is that I feel that when there's development, solar has to be, or alternate energy of some sort, has to be part of that. And that if you build a flat roof warehouse, that you should be required to allow that space to be available for solar panels. That's my...
That would seem to make a lot of sense, and hopefully you and other people are going to continue that, to what strikes me as a perfectly reasonable position to take, and could really enhance the benefit. Well, this has really been an interesting conversation, and I really appreciate you taking the time out of what I'm sure is a busy schedule to come here to the studios and tell the story of this solar farming project in the town of Paris. This has really been interesting.
Very good. Thank you, Greg.
John Holloway is the chair of the town of Paris and our morning show guest today here on WGTD. So good to have you here. Nan, do you have any announcement for us before we finish up?
Just quickly, I just wanted to reiterate something you said earlier, Greg. You obviously have a deep and broad knowledge about this project that you gained through your own endeavors. on top of being the town chairperson for Paris. So that's very impressive. So thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yes, quickly, I'll just tell you that there are a couple of things going on as usual. Riverbend Nature Center has their Winter Break Nature Camp December 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's for children 7 to 12 years old. Members of Riverbend, $40 per day. People yet to be members, $45 per day. Space is very limited, so registration is required. They get to do all kinds of things, snowshoeing if there's snow, tracking wildlife, exploring River Bend in the winter, playing outside and inside. So it's a great time for your kids to have a fun time while they're off of school. So again, just go to their website. Space is limited. Reservations are required. The Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center is having their Happy Winter Solstice celebration on Wednesday, December 21st, from 6 until 7:30 p.m. The event is free for adults and families. There's a suggested donation of $5 per person. There'll be guided luminary hikes at 6:15 and 7 p.m. They start at the front of the farmhouse. They'll have a candlelight passing and winter intentions meditation at the beginning of the hike, followed by a walking portion along the trail for those who are interested and able. The gift shop will be open. Just if you need more information, just go to the website for the Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center. And one last thing, if you're having difficulty